Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
And responsible.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kim, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory with great warranties, great pre-owned inventory, Sunbury Motors guarantee, terrific service department. Routine, difficult, they handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Hall of Fame Day. It's the day we find out who gets into the Baseball Hall of Fame. We know Jim Leland's already going. And we will have Bob Nightingale on at 1:35 today, Neil Coulong at 2:35. And we'll find out later who got the suits home because they got to bet the house on. I mean, again, a lot of bad moves. No, we're not going to do that. No. Sorry, Todd. Thought
that was the. He might still be at lunch. We might have to wait till after Neil's done in the last segment.
Todd, that opens the door to the easiest joke of the day.
Yeah, I know.
suit's been out to lunch for years. All right, so years, I tell you. He's at lunch today?
Well, I assume. I didn't see him yet. How's that?
I mean, he kind of leads the world in movie reviews. Ah, how'd things go in sales today? Ah, I went and I saw Oppenheimer. Oh, jeez. All right. I was kind of hoping you made a sales call. All right. So always issues to talk about, and we're talking yesterday about the court storming incident that took place at Ohio State. And what I think they had 18,000 people at the game. That's great because people want to come out and see Caitlin Clark play. I hope she's on the Olympic team. I mean that's going to be heavily populated with WNBA players and so forth. So I understand that. But geez, I hope they would have a spot for her. It would be good, you know, great for the United States, both as a player and to have her out there as and also to have her out there because, let's face it, you know, people follow her, and NBC, I'm sure, would love that. But this is where, for example, the security people at Value City Arena needed to do a better job, because this was not, in terms of security for the situation, this was not an unexpected moment. And this is the reason why I say that. The game went to overtime. Well, when the game goes to overtime, the possibility is sitting there that, guess what? The number two ranked team in the country could lose. Game's in overtime. So you had 5 minutes to say, hey, look, we got to make sure that we figure out quickly, how do we get Iowa off the court? How do we make sure the coach is protected? She already has security to begin with, so she already has that. But we got to make sure that Caitlin Clark gets out. All right? Got to make sure of that. And that's the, I mean, it ended up being an 8-point game, like 100-92. And the entire hit is inadvertent, but you've got to do a better job security-wise of taking care of a situation like that. You just have to, especially when you know that you've been handed a golden opportunity to figure it out. Hey, they're going to go to overtime. We got 5 minutes to figure this thing out. 5 game minutes to figure this out. Not 5 minutes overall, but 5 game minutes to figure it out. All right? And this is what we need to do because, you know, this isn't one of those, hey, they came down the floor and all of a sudden they went on some 10-0 run and hit the shot at the buzzer and beat them and there's a court storming. And, you know, okay, that's hard for anybody to handle. Okay? But when you're given 5 extra minutes to do it and the game is in overtime, there is a, like, it gives you a chance to put a plan in place, and it looked like they had no plan in place.
I think if you watched Penn State Wisconsin, you could see the Penn State security guards starting to mill in the two spots where they were pretty sure the students were going to stream onto the court.
Yeah, and, but the, you know, it's odd. Somebody asked me like, "What did I when the scene happened?" Because you could see it was going to happen. You could see them now. Somebody starting to come down. All right. I'm thinking, oh, here they come. The first thing I looked over as I wanted to make sure Wisconsin got out. I've been there on both sides, okay? I've been in there on both sides in terms of broadcasting these games. And that is, you do worry about the team getting out as the champ, you know, because look, they're now bystanders in this whole thing. Like, everybody run because they are running. And so you do have to worry about that. And I thought the Jordan Center security crew did a great job. The Ohio State crew did not, especially when the franchise is out there. And I don't mean the franchise for Iowa. She's the franchise for women's college basketball right now. She's the whole deal. With all due respect to Angel Reese, she's the whole deal, and it is. I mean, they should have made sure there was somebody near her. Now she's running and she's not looking, and the girl running out with the cell phone, you know, holding up her cell phone, showing this whole thing, she obviously isn't looking. And you have a collision. All right. Joel Embiid had 70 last night. Wow. What a performance. That, against Wembanyama, no less. Wembanyama gets numbers. I asked somebody who went to the Wizards-Spurs game the other night. I said, what'd you think? And she looked at me and says, he's tall. Well, thank you, Kate. Yeah.
Hey, Steve, Matt is on the line.
Hey, Matt, how are you?
Guys, how's it going?
Hey, Matt, how's everything going?
Well, it's, I would say, a week removed from the, almost 2 weeks now, from the Eagles being eliminated. There's still some things that I'm still not, that doesn't quite settle with me, but let's just say we're a little bit better than what we were a couple weeks ago.
Well, good. That's really great. That's refreshing that you would.
Joel Embiid putting down 70 last night certainly helped. Let me put
absolutely.
It that way.
Absolutely. There's nothing like a great NBA regular season game that really has about as much meaning as a table, you know. But that's okay.
I'm just searching for something here.
Well, it's going to be a prolonged search. But no, the 70.
I mean, listen,
the 70,
I know we've got to perform in the playoffs. That's kind of how the approach I've taken the whole year, but I had fun watching that last night.
No, 70 is that's a different ball game. Anytime you get over 50 in a game, that's something to be celebrated.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something to be celebrated. All kidding aside, I mean, 70? Holy mackerel. Wow. And what? Did Wembanyama play any defense? Or?
I don't know if any of the Spurs played defense. They hit threes really well, which is something they hadn't done until last night. But, yeah, other than that, nobody really played defense actually last night. But that's a different topic. Nobody's really playing defense in the NBA anymore.
Listen to what you're saying. Golly. Come on, this is Wemby. God, everybody loves Wemby. You know? He is putting up great individual stats for a team that stinks.
Exactly.
20 points.
He had 33-8, almost 33-20, and his team wasn't even close. And that still wasn't even close. His team tried to stay in it in the fourth quarter last night because they couldn't stop making threes. But other than that, yeah, they got a long way to go at the San Antonio Spurs.
Well, that's what I said when they drafted him. I said, I'm sorry, yeah. He's not going to What did I say when they drafted him? He will not. This league is interesting in that you need veterans to make it happen. That it takes a long time, no matter what talent you draft, to finally rise up. Now, let's give credit where credit's due. Anthony Edwards was a first overall pick of the Minnesota Timberwolves, as was Karl-Anthony Towns. Look where Minnesota is now. But, again, Towns is now a veteran. Edwards is a much better NBA player than I thought he was going to be. I thought he'd be a good NBA player. But, no, not this. He's really, really good. But you need a lot of bodies around you to make it happen. And for a guy like Wembanyama, like, you look at the roster, that's not exactly the kind of roster you sit back and go, hey, let's get playoff tickets.
Yes, no question there. Plus, at the same time, you and I both said that let's wait and see on this guy a little bit as far as he deals with the physicality of the NBA. Now, so far, it seems to be okay. I haven't watched every single minute of Spurs basketball, but you know, this guy still needs a lot to go with too. So there's that. But speaking,
they're 8-35 on the season. So you're bragging about a guy getting 70 against a team with an 8-35 record. That's your calling card. What's next? Getting 75 against the Pistons?
Hey, at least my team won, and the other team and Cat's team didn't blow a 18-point fourth quarter lead to the stinking Hornets. At least my team won by 10 and didn't blow a lead last night.
Yeah. Yeah. You won 6 in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're a half game, if not have overtaken the Bucks for the number 2 seed in the East right now.
Yeah, they're a half game back of Milwaukee. Yeah.
Yeah.
They've got Lillard. You don't. You're dead.
Oh, I already knew that. Trust me.
Yeah.
But speaking of guys that are getting overhyped once again, and this still baffles me to this day, Steve, I think you know where I'm going with this, is the fact that everybody is still enamored in the NFL with Chip Kelly. How can this guy possibly continue to get looks in the NFL after they saw what a fraud he was at being exposed in his time with the Eagles and his one season with the 49ers? Again, how do you bring in a guy who's so strict on his fraudulent philosophy of it's number of plays, not time of possession, which it's not, and think that you can work with him as your offensive coordinator? I don't care what he's done in college at all, because that's college. This is the NFL. The NFL, it doesn't fly like that. You saw what happened was with the Eagles. He had a good first season with them and almost a good second season until they fell apart because defensive coordinators were starting to catch on to how you deal with his hurry-up offense, is that you make sure you get them off the field in 3 plays in 50 seconds, and then their defense is going to get tired. So I just don't understand why NFL franchises still think that this guy can coach in the league, because he can't. He absolutely can't. It still stuns me to this day.
Well, everything's about personnel. I mean, that's always the important part. You can square peg round hole if you're trying to build towards something in a style of play where it takes maybe a little bit to get, you know, more of the round pegs to go in the round holes. But what's really difficult is when you're trying to when you're trying to put together a style, you have to have the people that fit the style. The Eagles didn't really have the people that fit the style. Even look at UCLA now. It's still a fight there to fit the style. He has to have the right quarterback to do it. A lot of things have to fall into play. When he was at Oregon, he had the right people in that offense to fit the style. When you don't, you've got some square peg round hole moments, it does become an issue. And that's something that isn't talked about a lot You know, you have to really sit back and say, look, I want longevity in this profession. I also have to have some adaptability based on the human beings I have. If I don't have people that can actually run it, why should I keep, like, philosophy sometimes has to be overridden by the talent available.
Exactly. Exhibit A, DeMarco Murray.
Still carrying hatred for that.
Listen, I always will. And if you ask Alex Kozora, you'll say the same. He would tell you the same thing. I always will carry disdain for that man and what
just
he did to the franchise at the time.
Give it up. Hey, it's all right. Did you drive to work today?
No, I mean I work from home now, so it's all good.
Oh, great. Okay. So when's the last time you drove a car?
The last time I drove a car was Sunday on the way to Mass with the family.
Okay. So you're going to drive the car to Mass this week.
Okay. Correct. And I will drive the next time I will drive will be, well, it might be today. I don't know. I might do an errand today, but if not, it'll definitely be tomorrow because I've got Bucknell basketball tomorrow night.
At some point, check the rearview mirror. That's what you need to do.
I'll try to keep that in mind next time I get in the car. Right.
Okay, just check the rearview mirror. You need to put certain things in the rearview mirror, okay? I mean, Todd, you agree with this, don't you?
I thought you meant Chip Kelly might be sneaking up on him. He has to look in his rearview mirror so the ghost of Chip Kelly doesn't attack him.
Well, here's the bottom line. I mean, if Chip were there, right, Captain Rearview Mirror here would then back the vehicle over him.
Well, that's true.
I know he would.
Yeah, that's right. Because I have the time and possession to do it. I'll just be out in three plays. Oh, sorry, I got wheels. I'll put the time and possession right over you, Skippy.
Well, I don't care about time of possession so much as points, but that's all right. Go ahead.
Well, speaking of the rearview mirror, I guess I still have to do with this, but this is still concurrent here. As the Eagles, it looks like that Nick Sirianni's going to come back, which is beyond me, but that's the way it is. But here's the one thing. It's one thing where you bring a guy back, and hopefully you bring in some coordinators, and I'll get to that in a second. But I just go now to the latest from ESPN's Jeremy Fowler. He was on with Philly Sports Radio this morning, and he mentioned that it's not going to be just the coordinators that are probably going to change this offseason. It's going to be other members of the coaching staff from both sides of the ball because they don't want to be there with all the dysfunction that happened in the last month. They don't want to be there because of the dysfunction. So you're telling me that despite what I just said, you still have confidence in this guy to turn it around when you have coaches that don't even want to be on the staff because of the dysfunction? And there was dysfunction. Everyone saw that in the playoff game if you didn't see it the last couple weeks of the season. And you still think this guy can lead the way? You're out of your mind. You're absolutely out of your mind. I don't care who you bring in as coordinators. That can't happen. I don't want a guy leading that if there's dysfunction and other coaches don't want to be on the coaching staff. I mean, that's unheard of to me. So I just think this is, once again, Jeffrey Lurie kicking the can down the road to, I think, there could be even bigger problems next year. I mean, we'll see what they bring on coordinators. Either way, they need to bring in coordinators that have NFL coaching experience to get through this guy's head and said, hey, Nick, maybe this isn't such a good idea. Maybe you should try something like this before the coordinators eat you up like they did this past year. I think that's the only way this guy saves himself is if he brings in guys that actually have head coaching experience. So if you bring in, like, Frank Reich, for instance, on the offensive side, that's who I want to see. Defensive side, Ron Rivera was in for an interview yesterday. I think that'd be a great fit. I know Wink Martindale hasn't been a head coach in the league, but he's certainly well experienced, and I've always liked his scheme, so he's another one. He needs guys like that can handle themselves, that can be a little bit of a ice pick in his ear to keep him and steer him in the right direction every time he wants to probably something crazy or what have you. But either way, the fact that the Eagles still think that this guy can coach and lead a team despite dysfunction during the last few weeks of the season, and that there and that coaches don't want to be with the coaching staff anymore, I think that's a big red flag to me.
He speaks highly of you.
Good. Step aside.
Oh, yeah. So, in other words, if he's in the driveway, you back over him, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah. And you go to church on Sundays? Oh.
How many Hail Marys does Eagle coach murder?
Well, let's just say that's why I every once in a while I have to utilize the sacrament of confession.
Oh, and this, what? What are we doing here? I mean, what the heck? I'm your confessor? What the heck's the deal?
I don't think we
You're
have the ability
therapist.
To...
You're my sports therapist. That's it.
I mean, geez, I'm going to put a tip jar down.
I don't think we have the ability to absolve him. I think that's the issue.
Oh. This is true.
Oh, oh,
I
we
just
get
my first set of frustrations out. Speedy's correct.
I mean, we could, like, you know, absolve him. It would mean nothing. It would be faux.
I'll talk to my pastor about it this weekend.
He'll laugh.
He probably will, actually.
Good. By the way, Joey Porter Jr. and Jair Brown made the Professional Football Writers Association All-Rookie Team. Congratulations.
As they should.
Jalen Carter got a pity vote. All right. That's your guy. Well, have a good week, Matt.
You too. We'll do this again next week.
Yeah.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hubbles Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. Terrific service department that backs it up. Routine, difficult, they handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online with sunburymotors.com. Hall of Fame Day. Very pleased to bring in Bob Nightingale, USA Today. Bob, welcome. Great to have you with us as always.
My pleasure. Thanks, Steve.
So, Bob, all right, here it is. You get to tell us exactly how you voted. So how many, yet you could vote for 10, how many did you vote for?
Vote for 7.
All right.
And, I added a few new guys. I added Andrew Jones this year. Jones just hit a wall toward the end of his career.
Yeah.
I didn't have the top 10 gold gloves. So, if Scott Rowland's getting in with his defense, certainly we should put, Andrew Jones in. So I think Rowland can open up the door for Andrew Jones. Voted for Hilton for the first time. I probably held against him, hitting only 350 home runs at Coors Field. It's like, playing so many games at Coors, that's all the home runs you could hit. And my thing was always, I didn't think you could compare to a guy like Fred McGriff. So I wasn't ever going to vote for him before McGriff got in.
Yeah, Bob, that's a great point. I mean, I know about the humidor and the whole thing. I got it. But that's a great point. McGriff kind of like spun his wheels for such a long time. And you can't hit that many home runs and not be really good, which he was. I agree with you completely.
Yeah, I mean, McGriff is 30 and 100 every single year, not playing in a home run haven like Coors Field. I mean, McGriff would hit about 600 home runs if he played his whole career at Coors. Yeah, the rest is a Carlos Beltran. I thought he was should go down to one of the greatest switch hitters ever. Unbelievable in the postseason. Yeah, he was part of the Astros scandal with the signs. But he was just a player. It wasn't like he was orchestrating the thing. And, players look at different ways to take advantage. Yeah, and he was one of them. Obviously, Adrian Beltre, easily the best, player on the ballot. A no-brainer.
Right.
Gary Sheffield. I thought Sheffield was the most feared hitter I've ever been around outside Barry Bonds. So I vote for him once again. He's gonna fall short. I vote for Billy Wagner. He was striking out 12 guys per 9 innings. So he was striking out guys when guys were embarrassed to strike out. A dominant guy. And by the toughest one I voted for, I voted for in the past, stopped, came back again, was Omar Vizquel. Certainly he's the best defensive shortstop I've seen since Ozzie Smith. Of course, with the sexual allegations and the domestic violence, I spent half a day with him a couple months ago, and he says, "Hey, you didn't do anything wrong." He's not apologizing. The thing got settled. Nothing was ever charged in domestic violence. So I went ahead and voted for him just on the obviously, as a player. And saying, okay, at least he clouds what actually happened after he's done playing.
Bob, was there anybody that could fill the 8 hole that you debated over and over again and just didn't quite, meet the muster?
Maybe Joe Mauer.
Yeah.
The thing is, Mauer is, going back to the power thing, well, he hit like 130 home runs, but my thing was he spent almost as many games playing first base and DH as he did the catcher. Sure. And unbelievable as a catcher for those first, 6, 7, 8 years or so. But then when he was an everyday first baseman, he was averaging 6, 7 home runs a year and about 50 ribbies. You can't do that at first base. So my thing was, and I really want to have him as the third catcher of all time to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, joining I think it was Carlton Fisk and also Pedro Rodriguez. And I thought, no, I was going to vote for him at some point. I just didn't want to vote for him right now.
Yeah. Okay. Adrian Beltre, he's going to get over, I think, 90%. Last time I saw him play in person, I went to a Red Sox game. He's playing the one year he played in Boston. All right. Makes 2 great plays in the field, hits a grand slam, Red Sox win 4-3. I'm like, going, this guy is something else. You saw him all the time. When you see him on an everyday basis like that, what did you appreciate about him at that time?
I think just the hard work and the work ethic. That's kind of the Dodgers when he came up. That's all anybody talked about, just what a hard worker this guy was. Did everything the right way, took over 100 ground balls a day, that sort of thing. He was on his way to the Hall of Fame when he was with the Dodgers, signs a big contract as a free agent with the Mariners. It wasn't close to being the same. Then you're saying, okay, he'll never have the career we all thought. He goes to Boston, turns it around, and then, of course, cements his career's legacy with the Texas Rangers. So still not sure exactly what happened all those years in Seattle. But he was just a shell of himself there.
Yeah, that's stunning. Everybody's going to have holes in their game. When you have a long career, it's just going to happen. So Billy Wagner's an interesting one to me, especially because of the postseason part. How did you – now, you talked about the 12 strikeouts per 9. How did you view the postseason part of your vote?
Well, it was such a short so few times he pitched.
Right.
Trevor Hoppen didn't have a great postseason either. Hoppen struggled a lot, when they in big time, whether it was a all-star game, whether it was Mariano was just a difference maker. So it factored in. I wish he had pitched more innings too. So the first 2 years, I did not vote for Billy Wagner. Then I started talking to people, you know, that played against him, played with him, and scouts. And then, you know, that was always brought up was, hey, you know, back then when he pitched, you know, nobody wanted to strike out. You know, now nobody cares. But this guy dominated. I think his, what, a 183 on base and batting average, you know, OPS against him is the lowest since 1900. But just was dominant when he did. So I was probably, you know, being, you know, with Mariano and Hoffman, I think, you know, I kind of clouded the judgment. Like, okay, I'll do Wagner. I'm not sure I'll do another, you know, reliever anytime soon. But I thought Wagner went over the hump. So I voted for him now probably the last 3-4 years.
With Miguel Cabrera not playing anymore, there's nobody at 500. There's nobody at 3,000 hits. Well, the guy that's over 500 is on the ballot, Gary Sheffield. What was your thought process in Gary Sheffield in terms of making sure that you got a vote, that he got a vote from you?
Yeah, no, I voted for him all 10 years. I covered the guy, knew him well. I said, outside of Bonds, he was feared. Middle of every lineup. Oh, people say, oh, you know, his defense wasn't good. Well, he was never DH'ing. He was good enough to play in the field the entire time. But just he was a difference maker. On game and everything else, you know, look at his career, too. I mean, he was very consistent. You know, I think he's getting docked over the that winter when he spent working out with Barry Bonds. And he said at the time he used the, you know, what they gave him was called, you know, the cream to kind of, he thought it was like a salve at the time because he had some stitches ripped out and put him on his knees. He says he only did it once. I know at some point he said he did it more than once on his knees. But you look at that year, it was one of his worst years ever. So it wasn't like, you know, whatever he used all of a sudden made him a star. So I think he deserves to get in, and I think he will get in. Not today, but I think he'll get in by the contemporary era committee at one point.
Well, you know, but I think he should be on in the vote because, you know what, you know, if you're sitting there in a game, say you're rooting for a team, and this guy comes up against your team, you worry about him. That tells me everything about the guy. If you're worried about him when he's just walking to the plate from the on-deck circle, and I felt like that with Sheffield. I know there's a wide variety of teams that he played for, but my goodness, every time he came up, you kind of felt the ball had a chance to get out of there. I just felt like everybody in the ballpark feared him.
Yeah, I mean, the fact he never struck out. I mean, I don't think he struck out more than 70 times, you know, 75 times a year. But you're exactly right. And it was like Bonds. I mean, the opposing manager, whoever's on the mound, knew exactly when Bonds' turn was going to come up. And I think the same thing with Sheffield. I mean, he just made a big difference. Like I said, I still think, you know, even now, I'd put him as the most feared player or most feared hitter I've been around, you know, outside of Bonds. It was, you know, their role by himself.
Beltre was an easy choice for you, obviously. Who was your second easiest choice?
Sheffield, second easiest. And then it was kind of a, you know, I didn't have a, you know, real strong thing. Like I said, you know, Beltran, being around him, he was unbelievable in the clubhouse, too. A great, great leader. Yep. And I think the Houston thing, you know, hey, we forgave the two guys orchestrate. We forgave Alex Cora. We forgave A.J. Hinch. They're managing, you know, why punish him? Like I said, you know, I think Wagner should get him. But, you know, nobody else, you know, really bothers. The only two guys, Steve, that really bothered me that we didn't vote him in as writers was McGriff, who finally got in, and Jack Morris. I thought the travesty that Jack Morris had to wait to a veterans committee for him to be voted in.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? Won a lot of games, and in the biggest moments, pitch big. I mean, pitch big. I mean, I don't know how much more you're supposed to expect out of a player.
14 years in a row. I mean, that means you're the best pitch staff for 14 years. Yeah,
right. Unbelievable. The way with that. So, how many do you think actually will get in? Two, three?
I think we'll see three. Yeah, I mean, I think we'll see a. You know, Beltre, of course, Maurer, and Helton. I think Wagner will fall just short, you know, which would be fine because he's, you know, on the cusp anyway. He's got one more year. I think Sheffield will fall short, and this is his 10th year, so he's going to have to wait for the contemporary committee. And, you know, we'll see. I think Edward Jones is making his way there. I think he gets in before his eligibility runs out.
Yeah. Do you like the process the way it is right now? I mean, I know they reduced the number of voters. They do have the next committee after this. Do you like where the process is?
The one thing I don't like is that everything's been made public. You know, like when we vote, you know, I vote every year for the National League MVP. You know, they tell you, do not make your, you know, don't let me know who you're voting for. So, like today, you know, you can, you know, you know, pretty sure that it's going to be those three guys in the Hall of Fame. We'll see about Wagner. And, you know, there's no suspense in anybody else. And I think, too, when people are releasing their ballots early and putting them on social media, I think people are voting for way too many people just so their audience, so, you know, the people on Twitter and social media say, oh, great ballot. He voted for all these guys. He ran out at 10. I think it's become such a thing now. If there wasn't a limit at 10 people, I think some people would vote for everybody on the ballot. So I think people are voting too much, worrying about what the readers will think about their ballot rather than what they really believe in their heart.
Yeah, because I know I vote all Big Ten football, all Big Ten basketball, and I vote for the Wooden Award. Right, same thing. We're told the same thing. You don't release who you voted for. And I never talk about it till after the fact. Of course, I'm asking you today before it's released. but it's, you know, but you know, it's the
yeah,
same.
Yeah,
it's the
yeah,
same. It's the
I
same story
put out there, you know, today. But yeah, I mean, I wait till the very end. And but yeah, that's what I love about the you know, the contemporary era ballot. And so, you know, the one that Jim Leland got in December, we had no idea who voted for him, who didn't. We still don't. They've been told, like, hey, you don't talk about who you voted for. So, you know, going to that night, you had no idea it was me, Leland, you know, Pinella, you know, both those guys, or what happened. So I like that kind of suspense.
One last question for you, Bob, and that's about Carlos Beltran. As a player on an everyday basis, what were the elements that stood out to you that makes him a cut above?
Just that he did everything right. I mean, he's a very good defensive center fielder. You know, he hit, you know, over 400 home runs, stole over 300 bases, you know, got on base. And I mentioned before, I mean, he was unbelievable in the clubhouse as far as a leader. I mean, he was, you know, there's maybe less than 10 guys I can say are great clubhouse leaders I've been around. And he's only one of them. So, and I like the fact, too, that, you know, he was, you know, stealing bases, too. What drives me crazy is people get so caught up on base percentage when a lot of times all they're doing is clogging the bases. It's like, you know, you got to drive in runs and score runs. And if you're not, you know, if you're not stealing second or getting on second, what good does it do to be, you know, staying on first? I mean, you know, we should put Eddie Goodell in the Hall of Fame. A base percentage with his walk.
That's right.
But it's yeah, I mean, some guys I think are way too infatuated, are way too worried about their stats. I mean, look at, remember Tony Gwynn and Rod Carew. I tease Rod Carew all the time. You know, thank God you guys played when you did, or you could be ripped for your exit velocity in the back end drawing up walks.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? And I love the guy that has the ability to read a play, can go from first to third, a guy that can read a play and he can get from second to home, right? That kind of base running. There's a certain feel for the game that those guys have, and Beltran had it, that feel for the game that separates because they know how to play it.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember his last year, he was only with St. Louis for a couple of years. Anyways, last year he was with St. Louis when they made the playoffs, went to the World Series, when they had their celebration. Before they even started, they grabbed Beltran and made sure to salute him just for what he meant to that club. And I'm not sure I can't remember seeing that before, where a player meant that much to a team. You know, he was an older player, obviously, at the time, but just so much for his leadership ability.
Bob, always a pleasure. Thanks a lot for sharing this with us today.
Sure, my pleasure. Take care, Steve.
Bob Nightingale, USA Today. Once again, despite incredible campaigning, the suit, who had no major league hits, fell short.
Not a surprise. Not much. Well, no. Not much in the base running department.
Base running, hitting, pitching, in the field, kind of came up short in every category. Now, when it comes to streaming, really good. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment. Here on News Radio 1070 W. That's just me. Don't forget, Shikellamy basketball coming up, starting the suit. Oh, wait, sorry, I was just reading the promo. Bad move, Todd?
I think it stars the Chief, but we'll go with the suit.
Oh, no, the Chief is... There's the definition of a real star in my mind. You know, punches in, tells everybody what's happening, why it's happening. It's not about him, it's about the kids. It gives it the broadcast balance. What do you think?
I just like it because that's who I sit beside when I go to Schick games.
I bet you learn a lot, too, when you're sitting there.
Oh, a long time, man. He was my football color guy a long time ago, too.
Yeah.